Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. How are you, Richard Wally?
Fine. How are you, Cassidy Robinson?
I think I've developed a new allergy.
Oh, good for you. Oh, I've developed all sorts of new allergies while I've been here, so.
Really?
And actually, when I was 25, I started becoming allergic to animal dander.
That was our cat.
That was partially your cat, but now it's all animals.
I know. It's so potent and so powerful that it just killed that part of your immune system.
Oh, okay. Well, animal?
People always come over and cuddle with the cat, and I'm like, you should watch out. Most people are allergic to him. It's like, oh, I've never been allergic to pets. And then, like, 5 minutes later, they're, like, crying and their nose is running. I'm like, I told you.
It's very, very true. Except for John Bender.
Yeah, that's true. But, man. I mean, he's lived through so much, I'm sure he's, like, evolved past, you know, human being status.
He's an other beast.
He's like the X-Men, what were they called? The Ultra Beings or something?
Uh-oh. I think what you're talking about. I can't remember.
There's, like, a fakey science word for what they are, besides mutant. I don't know for certain, but I'm afraid it might be a food allergy. Which I've never, I don't have very many food allergies. That's actually one of the few things I'm not allergic to. But I've been eating almond crunch, whatever, you know? The, like, Gorp with cornflakes and almonds.
Yeah.
Honey Bunches of Oats ripoff.
That for?
Huh?
So that's fairly healthy. Why are you eating that?
I just have always liked that cereal.
You feel sick?
No. I just like that cereal. It's really filling and it, you know, fairly different in flavor from most of the cereals. But I woke up, I had a bowl last night before I went to bed, and then I woke up with, like, my lips were itchy. So I thought I was developing a cold sore and I didn't see anything. And then I had another bowl, and all of a sudden I felt like my tongue was going numb.
Maybe.
It could be in my head.
It could be in your head, yes. No, Jackie, the only chapstick she can use now is Burt's Bees.
Really?
Yeah. When she turned, like, 24-ish, she ended up becoming allergic to chapstick, like other kinds of chapsticks in general. And so her lips, like, if she put it on, they would break out in hives.
Oh, that sucks. That looks the opposite of what you want from chapstick.
Yeah, right? So, like, I can't even wear, like, if I have to be careful with other chapstick, because if we, like, kiss or whatever, I know that's gross, but if we,
You're not my parents. I mean, I did see your guys' entire courtship, you know, go down, basically.
That's true. That's true.
So I saw you when you were, like, being all Romeo.
Oh, yeah, I do that for about 3 months.
And by being all Romeo, I mean, like, you just kind of made out in a room while everyone else hung out.
Yeah, that's how I usually work. Oh, why don't you start us off? Or do you want me to start off?
You can go ahead and start off the movie news.
Okay. Gotcha. So we already kind of know how you feel and I feel about this. But so apparently there are some front runners in the Ant-Man world.
Uh-huh.
There's Mr. Paul Rudd, and then there is Mr. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and they are front runners for Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. How do you feel about that?
In the Marvel Universe.
In the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Is there another universe that has Ant-Man?
I'm sure probably somewhere.
You're probably right.
In some, like, foreign graphic novel series or something like that, India. We were talking earlier. I I think both of us sort of prefer Paul Rudd on this, if it's one or the other.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit... I don't know. I wouldn't want to say that he's more versatile, because I think that Joseph Gordon-Levitt can do both comedy and serious at the same time, but I kind of like Paul Rudd's range for specifically this kind of character. I think that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is just a little too all over the place right now for me to be, for me to get really excited in him.
Yeah, you mentioned he's a little overexposed, and I very much agreed with that. I was saying earlier that I really think that Paul Rudd makes a good choice just because of the character Hank Pym alone. I think that the character, you know, that bipolar and the, and the whole, I don't want to be a superhero, but I am kind of a superhero because I created this crazy technology kind of character. I think Paul Rudd fits better. And I don't know. I just, in general, I think he's a good fit for Hank Pym. However, I did also come across the idea that it might be, because it does say Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Paul Rudd are frontrunners.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know that there might be more than one Ant-Man in the movie. So if they were both, I think that might work. Or specifically another Ant-Man that's kind of like this spy guy that Joseph Gordon-Levitt might fit very well for. So I don't know.
Okay.
Could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean... That would be a crazy idea. I'd be interested to see how the two actors would be integrated together, and I don't know if I've ever seen them together in a movie before. It seems like they should have crossed paths by now, but I don't know. They might have an interesting chemistry if that is, in fact, what ends up happening.
Agreed. But okay. I trust Edgar Wright, so...
Yeah. Foremost.
Yeah. So what's your news?
I don't remember. Let me find it. Oh, yeah. Michael Fassbender, the star of Steve McQueen's 12 Years a Slave, which is already up for a lot of Oscar consideration, has decided he is no longer going to be part of the bullshit campaigning that goes into to being nominated. So he very well might not get nominated, but I guess he still could if his performance is liked enough. But by deciding that he's not going to go out there and shake hands and go to every press junket and answer a bunch of questions and send emails to the Academy and all that stuff that goes into campaigning for an Oscar, it's pretty much guaranteed that he's not going to really be in consideration, which is too bad.
I could only imagine this being like some Dante level of hell. For not just actors, just anybody.
Yeah,
It's asinine, anyways. It's completely ridiculous. Like the movie should be judged on their merit alone, not who can kiss your ass the best. I don't know. We already talked about this, but I think I could go into years about how horrible and terrible I think this is.
Mm-hmm.
For actors. But I think it's great that Michael Fassbender is basically like, no, not doing it. Sorry.
Not going to do it. I guess he tried to. He tried to play the game a little bit with Shame, the other movie he did with Steve McQueen, and I guess, you know, that didn't really get him anywhere, probably because it was an NC-17 independently released movie.
Maybe the masturbation scene, too. He was very scary in that. I was frightened of him after that. I was like, what if I walk in and Michael Fassbender's in my bathroom masturbating?
So I think it's kind of a tiring process, sort of an annoying process. I told this story, James Franco, who was nominated, for 127 Hours, the same year that he ended up hosting the Oscars, that disaster of a telecast they did, with Anne Hathaway. But on the interview he did with Howard Stern, he was talking about the reason he decided to host the Oscars, or one of the biggest reasons, is because he knew that he could do one or the other. He could either campaign and possibly win an Oscar, or host and only have to worry about doing the show. So he threw away his Oscar, essentially, because he didn't want to campaign.
Oh, that's fair. No, I don't blame any of them.
No, yeah. And
sounds like the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I don't think I could be very good at it.
No. I agree.
What was your other news item?
My other big news item was, so that kid from Insidious is going to be in, Ty Simpkins is his name, is going to be in Jurassic World, the fourth installment to that series. I think that that's somewhat interesting. He's a good little actor and all that. But whatever I think is more, I'm more excited for, at least because of my newfound fandom of New Girl, is that Jake Johnson is in the mix for a role. And I'm pretty excited for that because he's funny. And I like him as an actor in general. And he was also in Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah. And I think which, he was also in Joe Swanberg's new movie, Drinking Buddies. It just came out a little ago.
Oh, probably. Well, the funny thing, too, that I just read while we had our short break is that Colin Trevorrow, whatever, I can't say his last name, the guy who did Safety Not Guaranteed, is actually directing this, which is actually sort of somewhat more, a little more interesting. Not a lot more, but a little more interesting.
I don't remember if we talked about that on the podcast or not, but it's a really strange choice. I don't watch Safety Not Guaranteed and think this guy could definitely do a big tentpole. Like, it's such a small movie.
Oh, that's the first thing I thought. Maybe that's why, though.
Small dinosaurs. All copies.
Well, that would be kind of awesome, actually. No, I actually think that Hollywood's kind of in this moment right now where they're searching for the next new directors, really. I don't know. I think he's a possible. He's an interesting one. I think that he could be. And also, some of the scribes of the script are also the people that did Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And so it actually does, you know, as much as I want to make fun of it because it's called Jurassic World and it's the fourth installment of the Jurassic Park series.
Yeah.
It's got some interesting tidbits going on with it. Well, it really does.
It could be fun. And that kid, whose name I've already forgotten.
Ty Simpkins.
Yes, he was also in Iron Man 3.
Oh, that is the same kid. You're right. I didn't even.
It took me a while to actually piece that together. Except for me, it was when I realized he was Insidious. I was like, oh, it's that kid.
Oh, okay.
Paul Feig, the director of Bridesmaids and The Heat, as well as, you know, from the Apatow School, was the co-creator of Freaks and Geeks. He says he wants to take on the prospect of doing a gay romantic comedy. And he's on his wish list, is Channing Tatum to star. But he has yet to confirm whether or not he would be in said movie. Kind of a different idea or take on this whole thing. I think it would be interesting to see. Because we're kind of living in a weird time where gay representation in film is at a high point as far as characters, you know, headcount. But the representation is, generally speaking, still only relegated to side characters, best friend characters, token characters in mainstream cinema, not counting independent film or foreign films. So it'd be interesting to see, and what I've always kind of wanted to see, is like an Apatow-style buddy comedy where the characters just happen to be gay, rather than it being an overt, token thing.
I mean, I'm a little worried. I'm not a huge fan of Paul Feig. I mean, Bridesmaids was okay. Uh-huh. I refused to see The Heat, because it looked like tripe. But I haven't seen it, though.
The Heat was not good. Okay. I mean, it is Melissa McCarthy's funny in it. You can go back and listen to my review. But I like Bridesmaids okay. I the reasons I dislike Bridesmaids are not bad reasons. You know, they're not the worst reasons to dislike a movie. I mean, I don't dislike it. I think it's fine. I just didn't think it was this groundbreaking, amazing thing that everyone made it out to be. It just happened to be a good comedy starring women, and those are so rare nowadays that it seemed like manna from heaven. But I like his sensibility. I think, you know, between him and Apatow, it always seemed like he was a bit more of the one who was kind of brought more of the character and the heart and the stuff to the television projects, and Apatow was more the comedy guy.
Sure.
And I think, I don't know, I think that it'd be interesting to see this kind of material done by a really mainstream, you know, generally thought of as a, you know, hetero-leaning filmmaker.
Agreed. I just worry about it being kitschy. Like, I just worry about it being kitschy, because I think that there's a certain kind of almost ungenuineness with a lot of filmmakers when they do it.
Yeah.
More to be on the bandwagon than anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Yeah. as opposed to a film like, that one with, Julianne Moore and,
The Kids Are Alright.
Kids Are Alright. That was a wonderful film.
Yeah. It was also an independent film.
Yeah, that's true. So I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying, and I see the potential, and I see the good strides towards it. Like the handshaking, whatever. I'm just a little cautious because I don't know. Cause if it's stupid, and then everybody praises it just because, you know, he used gay characters, I don't think that that's right. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can hope for the best. I think that the idea of getting somebody like Channing Tatum on board, obviously, you know, he's a funny guy. He's earned his wings as far as being a good comedic actor, and I think he can work within this type of group setting really well. And he isn't the immediate, well, I don't know. I was going to say he's not the immediate first-hand thought of who you would go to play a gay character, but that's not exactly true. He does kind of have a little bit of a rent boy quality to him.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. No. Like I said, it's to me, it's a mixed bag. I'm just worried about it being kitsch.
Sure. And I wonder if it is, you know, if it is well done and it's, you know, pretty thoughtful and everything, and I wonder how good of a release it really could have. It could still end up, you know, the same thing that happened to Behind the Candelabra, where it gets relegated to becoming a TV movie or a very limited release, something like that.
Yeah,
it depends.
It might not play well in China.
We don't want to go there.
I know. I just like to chide you once in a while.
All right. Well, we'll move on now to the pet topic, which is my turn. And it's not a deep one. I didn't really want to, like, pontificate too much here on this one specifically, but we're getting close to the Oscar season, the fall season that we've already talked about a little bit with the Michael Fassbender news. And I'm seeing all these trailers now going to the movies and seeing some of these things are probably going to be up for consideration. I'm seeing the trailers for the Oscar push stuff. And I just kind of wanted to weigh in on some of these movies between us. We don't have to spend a lot of time on each movie, but I just kind of want to get your general idea of how interested you may or may not be and what you think the movie's trying to be.
Sure.
So we'll start with 12 Years a Slave, the new Steve McQueen movie.
Steve McQueen, I think, has been pretty solid so far. I haven't seen anything spectacular out of him, but I have seen a lot of great potential. And, you know, I'm not sure specifically of the subject matter. It's been a big deal this year, but most of the movies have been really good. So, at least I've liked most of them. So, I don't know. I think that this one has a pretty good cast and a pretty good potential. So,
this one
I'm just kind of about. Like, not about, but just kind of like, kind of positive more about it.
Well, people are already saying, like, of the New York Film Festival and stuff, that this is, you know, this is blowing minds or whatever, which is exciting to hear. I don't know if it's true, if it's just, you know, self-generated buzz from the PR campaigns, but I hope it's as good as people are saying it is. And I think Steve McQueen is a good director. I think he's a better filmmaker than storyteller, per se.
Agreed.
But I think that he does get good performances, you know, especially out of Michael Fassbender, who he's been working with, and the cast, you know, we also have Brad Pitt in there as well. And it is a slightly more mainstream fare. I think he's going for a bigger audience. It's not NC-17.
It's not Michael Fassbender masturbating in a bathroom.
Well, you never know.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And he's playing a bad guy in this, which is interesting. You know, unsympathetic. So I don't know. I'm excited to see it. We'll see what it is, though.
Okay.
The next movie is Inside Llewellyn, or I don't know if I'm ever pronouncing this right.
I think it's Llewyn.
Llewyn Davis, the new Coen Brothers film about folk music.
Could be Ewan, because that's a double L, so that's probably some kind of Latin romantic name. Anyways, not to go too far into that. But no, I'm super interested in this one. The Coen Brothers always do good stuff, even...
Yeah.
Even, like, you showed me that movie Serious Man, and I thought that was quite good, and it was kind of overlooked a little bit, I felt like.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But, no, this one looks good. I think it's kind of a different take. I don't know. I am genuinely kind of like, oh, this should be a good time at the cinema. So yeah. This one I'm down for, period.
Yeah, me too. When it comes to the Coen Brothers, it's like, sign me up. I just love everything they do, and they've been on such a good roll lately, especially. They took a little bit of time off between this and their last movie, True Grit. Because for a while there, it was one a year. They were almost pulling a Woody Allen. But I'm excited to see this. I like the cast. Again, it's really good. Is it Oscar Isaacs playing the lead this time?
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting choice and a really good choice. So I'm excited to see that.
Because he usually plays side characters or, you know, sleazebags.
Well, he's Latino, you know, so.
Yeah.
That's what he gets relegated to.
Yeah.
We don't need no stinking badges, yeah.
But also, this will be the first time, or one of the first times in a long time anyway, that they haven't worked with Roger Deakins as their cinematographer. So that's kind of strange, too. But I hope that doesn't change the tone too much. But I think I'm excited.
Well, hopefully it does in a good way. So the next one, The Counselor. See, at first I was like, okay, whatever this is going to be, you know, Ridley Scott movie opening around October. And then I saw the preview without knowing what it was, and I'm actually,
yeah,
beyond the cast, just the look of it, just the feel of it. You know, maybe it's just an awesome trailer, but, and it's a Cormac McCarthy, based on a Cormac McCarthy novel.
Actually, it's not. I thought it was, but apparently Cormac McCarthy...
I thought I just read something on it.
No, Cormac McCarthy wrote the screenplay.
Oh.
It's not based on a book. He just went ahead and wrote the screenplay outright.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's interesting, too.
That actually makes it a little more interesting. So you kind of get to see maybe... I don't know. I don't know much about his screenwriting. Has he done a lot of screenwriting? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's always been stuff, you know, there's been a few movies based on his work, but... As a novelist, but I've never seen him credited as a screenwriter only before. So I am excited to see what that's about. And I also think it'd be good for Ridley Scott to do something kind of, you know, that takes place in modern times or contemporary times. It's kind of a thriller, noir. And again, amazing cast. You have Javier Bardem and Michael Fassbender and Brad Pitt again. And yeah, I'm actually really excited for this one. I don't like the title too much. I think it's kind of forgettable, but the trailers certainly sell it pretty well for me.
Well, fair enough. I think that I agree. Like I said, it could just be an awesome trailer. I hope not, but yeah.
The next film I have here on my list is American Hustler. Is it Hustle or Hustler?
Hustle.
American Hustle, the new David O. Russell film with, again, a huge ensemble. Who am I forgetting? Basically everybody.
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale, yeah.
Dr. Raccoon. No, he is in this film.
No, I know.
I forget his name. I forget his real name because I kept
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, that's his name.
And Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Adams. So a bunch of people that's been in his last couple movies.
Well, we were referring to this. We were joking about it. Friends, we were kind of saying that this was the Marvel DC crossover that will never happen.
And it's probably better that it doesn't happen. I'm really excited for this movie, probably more than anything else on this list, and I don't even really know why, other than the trailers just are really well put together. I love the cast, and I've really been liking David O. Russell's last few movies. I think he's improved so significantly as a director from, you know, going from his independent films like Flirting with Disaster and Spanking the Monkey into I Heart Huckabees, and now, you know, the last few movies he's made, The Fighter and Silver Linings Playbooks, have been my favorite by far of his career. And it seems like every movie he's making is better than the last. And this one has a real sort of Scorsese vibe, like kind of vintage Scorsese look to it. Could just be the soundtrack they used in the trailer, I don't know. But it looks like a lot of fun.
More than anything, I agree with your last sentiment, just about it seems like David O. Russell's on kind of on a run. My first impression was just a poster with that guy's face on it.
Joaquin Phoenix?
Joaquin Phoenix, yeah. And I was just like, oh, he looks very happy. That's very different for him. but then I saw the trailer. I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued.
Yeah?
It's about his romance with
the robot.
His house, yeah.
Yeah. It's basically like if Tony Stark fell in love with Jarvis.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Exactly like that.
I actually am pretty excited about this movie. I mean, it's really easy to see this trailer and kind of immediately dismiss it as being kind of twee and obnoxious, but it's done by Spike Jonze, who's a really talented director. And he also wrote it, too, which I don't think he normally does. He usually, you know, works with Charlie Kaufman, movies like Adaptation and Being John Malkovich. But he also did, like, Where the Wild Things Are, which I loved. And really, the trailer, although, yes, very idiosyncratic, it kind of gets me emotional just watching that 2.5 minutes. Like, I start to get... It has kind of a Lars and the Real Girl vibe to it as well. I don't know. I'm kind of down.
Are you nostalgic? Are you like, man, I love my computer?
No, it's not that. It's
like, I'm just teasing.
You know, that sense of loneliness, I can tell, is definitely what they're going for, and I think it's going to really work. I don't know. Especially, you know, Joaquin Phoenix coming off The Master, is a very intense and gifted dude.
No, agreed. I think it looks interesting.
Yeah.
The last few years, actually, of Oscar season has been strange just because everything does seem fairly interesting. Even this one, I feel overly... I feel strange because I feel like I'm overly like, oh, yeah, that looks interesting. Oh, that looks interesting. Including the next... are you done?
Yeah, I was just saying, well, this year, these films that we're talking about now, you know, they're not immediately up for consideration. We're just... Sure. We're speculating. A movie as strange as her might not get noticed for anything, maybe other than acting. Do you want to move on to Nebraska?
Yeah, Nebraska, actually, I first saw the poster. This is another poster one. I guess I'm a poster guy. but I was like, oh, it looks like a strange version, or it almost reminded me of like that David Lynch movie, his first one.
Racerhead?
Racerhead, yeah. It reminded me of Racerhead a little bit, and I was like, that's strange. And so I looked it up, and I don't know why, but just Will Forte and some of the performances in it and the idea of it, I don't know, it just looks compelling to me. This is one of the ones I'm kind of more interested in, and I'm not really sure why. It's also in black and white, which I'm kind of a fan of, as long as it's used well. So, yeah, and I think it looks like it's beautifully.
Yeah, it looks really, really gorgeous. And I haven't looked into who shot the movie, but it's directed by Alexander Payne, who I've mentioned in the podcast before. Is one of my favorite writer-directors. We did Sideways and About Schmidt and Election, and most recently The Descendants. And I'm excited for anything he wants to do, which is, you know, there was a huge break between Sideways and The Descendants, so this is really fast for him to have a movie out this fast again.
Sure. Other than that, I mean, it just looks stark and kind of, I don't know, fun.
Yeah. Kind of more actor performance oriented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Wolf of Wall Street, I'm a little hesitant for.
Really?
Just from the trailer, yeah.
Okay. I've almost forgot that this movie was coming out because they started a marketing push on it early, like early summer. Like, I think I saw a trailer for it when I saw Great Gatsby, which would make sense because it has Leonardo DiCaprio, and this is done by Scorsese. This is their new thing. But then I heard that it was not going to come out until, like, January, February. But then now I heard that it actually is going to come out within 2013. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a red flag or what.
I don't know a red flag. I just the trailer. I'm just kind of like, I could go either way with it, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's Martin Scorsese, so I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. That's like, you know,
yeah,
duh. But and I mean, the actors in it are all pretty. For you know, it's pretty interesting. The little bit I saw from Leonardo DiCaprio as well as Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah,
but I don't know why, though. I'm just kind of a little hesitant about it, just from the trailer, though.
It does look a lot like Wall Street, the, you know, the Michael Douglas, Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah.
So it looked maybe a little bit of a retread on that, but I don't know. I mean, I generally speaking, I like Scorsese better when he's working in contemporary America rather than doing a historical piece or something like that.
Okay.
I hope it's good.
Agreed. That's just my initial, because that's all we're doing, really.
Yeah.
Hypothesizing in grand.
Sure. Here's a movie I'm not excited for, and I don't really know why. Even though I think it's because the trailer is begging me to be excited. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty with Ben Stiller.
Agreed. I don't know. Like, and it's been kind of... It seems like it's been pushed for a long time. But, I mean, I've heard good things since, like, I don't know, like... Seems like Sundance time-ish.
Okay.
But I don't know. I'm just kind of like, once I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, I guess we'll see.
Well, I do appreciate that the trailer's vague. There might be more, specific trailers to come out, story-specific trailers to come out in the next little while. But I like the fact that the trailer's not telling me much, but it's also not really doing much for me either. It kind of looks like somebody's inspirational poster in their office, the motion picture.
Agreed. no, very much agreed. I don't really have too much to say about it. I don't know.
He can do it. Like I there are movies with Ben Stiller where I really
I love Ben Stiller as the bad guy and in serious films.
Yeah. And it'd be good to see him working in a more serious film again. Get him off this Fokker business. But I just don't know what this movie is. There's just not enough there for me to gravitate towards, other than I know it's going to be very visual. I don't know if it's going to be a travelogue. Is there a fantasy element? I don't know what this movie is.
It seems like it's about a guy who
kind of a mad
fantasizes life, but I don't know. I just don't have a lot to go off. I'm just kind of like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
The next film, I don't know why. I think it's just because it has Bill Murray in it.
Yeah.
But I want to see it, and I don't know why, because it's usually like World War II and stuff like that. Like, that's not necessarily the first draw for me.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the subject matter too. I don't know, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and them like stealing art from Nazis. I don't know why, but that just sounds like a good time to me. I'm like, okay, I'll go see that.
The Monuments Men.
Yeah, The Monuments Men.
This is the new George Clooney film, not just starring, but also directing. I didn't see his last film, the one he did with Ryan Gosling, which I've already forgot the name of. And it wasn't terribly well reviewed, but I am a little excited about this. There is a part of me that wonders if it's going to be a little too on the nose with the whole idea of, like, we must save art because, you know, we are artists and you know what I mean? Like a filmmaker kind of preaching about the importance of being a filmmaker. Like that'll be the subtext. But I hope that it has fun with its cast, because it looks like a good cast and it looks like a little bit more rowdy than some of his other films.
Agree. I don't know. I think this might be I'll watch kind of one time, kind of have fun with it, and then be done with a little bit.
Yeah.
In my head, at least, from speculation. So, but I don't know. Like I said, it's got Bill Murray in it, and that, for some reason, is really selling me right now. Yeah. Which doesn't always, but this time it does. So.
Well, and every year, I think you always see that there's like the there's always carryover from whatever won the year previous, whatever won Best Picture, and it kind of looks like this is this year's Argo. And kind of this plot is, you know, kind of sleuthy. It has to do with war and art and da da da. But so we'll see what it ends up actually being. The Palme d'Or winner from last spring, Blue is the Warmest Color. I don't know if it's going to be nominated. It is a French film, or foreign of some sort. I'm pretty sure French. And not always does the Palme d'Or winner get nominated, but lately that has been the trend. We had Tree of Life be nominated for Best Picture, and then last year we had Amour get a nomination, which is also foreign. So, Blue is the Warmest Color may end up getting a nomination.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. The trailer seemed... Well, I don't know. Like, I know what the subject matter is vaguely, and mm-hmm. that seems somewhat interesting. I'm not sure if for the right reasons or not, just to be frank. However, I don't know. I mean, I'm just not a big love story kind of guy, so we'll mm-hmm. see.
Well, yeah, I think what you're getting at, it's a lesbian love story.
Yeah.
And it deals with teenagers. What's more interesting about this than the trailer is kind of all the news and reviews that's come out. It's getting very polarized reviews. Like, some people are saying, you know, best thing ever, it'll make you cry, and some people are saying this is really exploitative, and even more strange is that the actors who were in it came out and said they would never work with the director again because they were made to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know. It did well at Cannes, so...
Yeah. A French film. Who would have thought?
Yeah, how about that?
Alright.
These last two are kind of a little... I don't know. I feel like the last two are a little kind of graspy for the Little Gold Man. And, specifically, Out of the Furnace seems really dark and dour, and I refer to it as the Winterbone 2. However, I will say one thing. Seeing Christian Bale as kind of a fat dude in American Hustle, and then seeing this trailer as this not, like, meth addict in the second one, I really, like, does he just enjoy, like, going up and down in weight? Like, is there some kind of, like, thrill in it for him, or...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's the only actor who can do that, so everyone's like, come on, you can do that.
Come on, you can be skinny as hell and then fat as hell in like 3 days. No, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, I'm half and half about both of it. I'm just kind of like, okay, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, no, this is directed by the same guy who did, that country music one.
Crazy Heart,
yeah, which was a good movie. It didn't like excite me as much as some people, but it was a good movie. I don't know. I don't get much from this trailer. It looks a little, like you said, a little Oscar grabby. It looks very dour. And every time I see this trailer pop up, I'm like, oh yeah, this movie's coming out. Like, I don't know. There's something about it that it might end up being really, really good. I'm not seeing it in the trailer though.
Yeah, it's hard to tell with a lot of these movies, because there's been movies that I've seen and the trailer's, like, wonderful, and I see it and I'm like, well, that was a really boring, flaming turd, so. And then again, like, last year, I kept making fun of Lincoln before it came out, and then I ended up enjoying Lincoln quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I actually have a bad track record with this, so we'll see how it goes.
Me too, really.
The last one... Oh,
go ahead.
Okay, the last one, The Book Thief. Oh my gosh, this one looks the worst. It is the definition of Oscar bait to me, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
We were talking about some of the tropes from Oscar trailers,
yeah,
or just Oscar movies in general that run throughout it, whether it's whether it's lettering, whether it's voices, whether it's, I don't know, just the introduction even. Like, it's this little girl in World War II during the Holocaust doesn't have a family. It's like, oh my gosh. I'm not even exaggerating. It's like, this is all just things it said. And yeah. To me, it's just the most pretentious thing that I've seen in a bit. So, I don't know. Maybe it'll be great. But I kind of am really, really...
not excited.
Really doubting.
I feel like this is a movie they made for this season, but I feel like it's going to be overlooked. Because I feel like it's too obvious. It also kind of has like a Hugo-ish vibe to it as well. Because it has kind of it seems like the trailer has a bit more like of a light spirit, which is weird because it's about the Holocaust. So maybe that's just a bad trailer, and it's not portraying it like it really should. But the whole thing just seems really saccharine and kind of gross.
Agreed. Yeah. Saccharine is a beautiful word to use for that.
All right. Well,
yeah, I'm done with that. Done with the Book Thief.
We'll probably review many of these movies, so we'll be able to put our two cents in on them. But before that, we'll go ahead with this week's reviews, and I'll let you do your two cents on Machete Kills, which you saw, but I did not.
Yeah, Machete Kills. If you saw the first film, you kind of know what you're getting in for. I would say this one is a little bit more lighthearted. Which actually makes it a little bit more entertaining. However, I think in its substance, it kind of lacks. So, I mean, you kind of sacrifice in this film.
Uh-huh.
Machete Kills is returning to the Machete franchise where Machete goes and he fights people. he fights white people, basically, yeah. Is what it's about. Bad Mexican people. Played by Danny Trejo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Robert Rodriguez's film. I kind of wonder if it's just because they're not, you know, it's still one of those financing problems. He's still maybe looked down upon a little bit because of his Sin City move. I'm not really sure. I'm just not really excited about the Machete films in general because it's kind of like him not making very serious films. That's what it seems like. A movie I felt like that did the a comedy spoof of exploitation films, but still kind of doing it justice. I thought Black Dynamite did a lot better.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, now that I've gotten past my rant about how I'm not really into these movies, basically this one is strange because it just goes to hit for the fences, basically, for another film. It sets up that Machete will be going into space.
That I'm more excited for.
So if you are excited for that idea of Machete in space, this film is a huge setup for the third film.
All right.
It makes an abundance of overt, very, very blatant Star Wars references. what can I say? I still don't particularly like how he treats women in the film.
Yeah.
There was a lot less boobies, but now he just kind of... they're just kind of side characters that he doesn't even really deal with, even though they're kind of like major parts in the trailers and stuff like that. It's actually a lot about how it actually has more to do with Charlie Sheen and Mel Gibson. Charlie Sheen, I don't know. He's one of those people who's apparently famous. I just don't really care much about. He's in TV shows I didn't give a shit about, and he's in movies I usually don't give a shit about. So that's my take. That's my another rant about people who are in this movie. Mel Gibson, it's good to kind of see him in a film, kind of, actually. I thought he was fine. I thought he played an okay bad guy. But like I said, this one's a little warmer and fuzzier. I mean, it's still very exploitive in the violence and stuff like that. But it's a little bit more lighthearted, which I think is better, because I really didn't buy the whole I'm trying to fit in a serious message within this exploitation kind of kitschy kind of frame.
Yeah.
And so I still didn't buy that when he did it a little bit in this one. And so I don't know. I don't feel like the film needs a whole lot of explication just because of what it is.
Yeah.
It's a Machete movie. If you didn't see the first one, then I don't know what your interest in the second one would be, really. And in general, I give it mixed reviews.
Would you say
I don't know, do you
better?
Have any questions for me?
Yeah, would you say it's better than the first one?
For me, mixed. I feel like the filmmaking in the first one, technically, on the technical side, was better. However, I feel like this one was just easier to watch. It was just more entertaining.
Okay.
It almost felt like his Spy Kids movies, but for adults.
All right. Well, because one of my biggest problems with the first one was it wasn't so much the violence, the exploitation, or any of that. It was just that it was just too long and really convoluted. There was like a zillion characters, and it felt like it just had the weirdest roundabout way of getting through what should have been a really simple movie.
He does get away from that a bit. He still has some characters that essentially do nothing in them, but... Mm-hmm. But I think it's a little bit more pared down, and I think maybe that's what made it a little more entertaining, actually, is that exact thing that you're talking about with the first one. To me, it wasn't necessarily the violence. It kind of. I don't know. It just seemed really kitschy to me, the first one, and I was like, okay, I guess. But then he'd mix these, like, really serious, like, messages.
Mm-hmm.
Or he'd mix, like, he'd do, like, a... Basically, like, it was like The Eternal Jew, the old propaganda Holocaust film, but he did it with, like, roaches instead of rats in the first one. And there was all these, like, really, like, in-your-face, like, political messages, which I just kind of rolled my eyes at because I'm like, you're this in a fucking machete film. I don't know. I don't buy it. I mean, the messages, it's funny because they're ones that I actually I do agree with.
Yeah.
However, I just don't agree with his take in the movies.
Well, you know, it just feels shoehorned.
It just feels shoehorned, and it feels just kind of out of place. Where in this one, I don't feel like he does that as much. He still takes on some of those and plays with some of those biases and stuff like that. But maybe a little bit more intelligently, maybe a little bit... So I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag, really. Some of the things that I didn't like about the first one he fixes... But then some of the stuff I did like about the first one, he kind of, I don't know, this one was a lot more light and fluffy. So.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't terribly excited to go see it, so, I mean, to know that it's not significantly better doesn't make me really have to see it either. I agree with you, I feel like these machete movies is just like, it's like the adult version of him doing the Spy Kids. It's like, just get to work. Like, do a real movie, please.
That's kind of what I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
That's, I guess, one of my bigger problems with this series in general, because I'm just like, I am, like, kind of questioning, you know, is he not getting funding? Is he really doing a lot of this on his own, and this is part of the reason why he's doing them?
Well, he does have the Sin City coming out here pretty soon, so we'll see if that can kind of resurrect him, but...
Agreed, but that was, I mean, the Sin City franchise was kind of, he had to take himself out of the Directors Guild. He had to do a lot of things to make that movie the way he wanted. And so I'm just wondering if that's still fallout or if we're dealing with some of the larger issues within the studio system.
Well, I think he could still be an independent financed independent director. I just think he can still do better movies. He's done better movies. And I think we've talked about it before. My biggest problem with the machete movies is just like, we've seen this. This is just, a grungier version of Desperado. And Desperado kind of mixes all those elements together better.
I think that's definitely a great point. And for this new film, I don't think that really changes.
Yeah.
I think this one's a little, again, if you're just looking for an entertaining time, I would say this one's a little more entertaining. I laughed a lot more in this one.
Is this a Netflixer?
This is definitely, hell yeah. I would say the first one's kind of a Netflixer, but I would say that this one is definitely, when it comes on the instant queue, check it out. It's really silly, and the next one will, I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't hide it at all.
Yeah.
We're definitely going into space for the third one.
That I'm down for. If it's going to go completely bonkers, then just go for it.
It goes pretty bonkers in this one, so maybe you should check it out. Maybe not in theaters, but definitely on Netflix.
All right.
So,
well, I'm going to review Captain Phillips, which I saw, but you did not. It's the new film by Paul Greengrass, who's pretty much made a career out of you know, doing films based on the post 9/11 paranoia, specifically with United 93, the last two Bourne films. Well, not the last two because there's Legacy now, but the last two Bourne films with Matt Damon, Green Zone. And this film is based on a true story. If you've seen the trailer, you basically know what happens here. Captain Phillips is played by Tom Hanks, and he is a captain of a freighter ship that's taking some supplies into Africa. Some Somalian pirates come and attack and break in, and they're kind of put in this tent situation for the, you know, whatever it is, an hour and a half to hour 40 that the movie lasts. And it's kind of them, you know, about normal people, real people, not movie character people, but real people, and how they react when they got a gun on them and they don't have any way of protecting themselves, and the negotiations that go into keeping everybody safe. It's a good movie. This will be an easy movie to review because there's not a whole lot to say about it. It is exactly what it looks like. Paul Greengrass is very good at doing tight thrillers. You know, he knows how to get in there and get it done. It's a no-fuss kind of genre exercise, but it gets the job done. And the performances are really good. It kind of has a documentary-ish feel to it, which is, again, sort of his style. There is a lot of shaky cam, but if there is a director who knows what to do with that, it's him. Nothing about it blew my mind or was spectacular, but I was totally entertained while I was watching the movie. I was invested in the characters. I hoped that they would be safe, which I think is what the movie's going for. Tom Hanks does a really good job. You get the idea. I was thinking, like, is this going to be like his Oscar push? Does he really want to be nominated for this? And throughout most of the movie, I was like, no, yeah, you know, it's good. I just don't feel that from it. So maybe not. Maybe it's not even trying for that. And then there's one scene at the end, and that one scene at the end might just get him a nod, because it is some fine piece of psychological acting. Greengrass and Tom Hanks are very similar in that they are very dependable actors, are very dependable artists. So the combination of the two makes for a very dependable movie. I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. I don't know. I felt like this was going to be kind of another Rush experience.
Yeah, I would say, actually, I think Rush is maybe a little bit more thematically ambitious.
Okay.
This is, like I said, just a very tight genre exercise. I mean, it's not really a story so much as a situation that you watch play out for an hour and 40. But there is some good side performances. The people who play the Somalians are pretty talented, and the movie does do some thematic gesturing as far as, like, at the beginning of the movie, Tom Hanks is talking to his wife, played by Catherine Keener, who's in it for literally a minute or two, and is talking about, you know, his son, and is like, you know, the world's different than it was when we were young, and it's much harder to get a job, blah, blah, blah. And then later it cuts to the Somalians before they jump into the sea to steal this boat. And it shows that they're, you know, like, are, you know, hard in luck, and they're trying to make their money. So there is, like, some sort of gesturing towards the economic issues, and you know, it's the situations that cause people to do bad things, blah, blah, blah. But it's really not. I mean, talk about shoehorned. I think that little bit in the front of the movie is just basically trying to frame this in a lot more elegantly than it needs to be. It really is kind of a throwbacky 90s style thriller.
Okay.
But it's a good one.
No, I'm sure it is, and it looked like it would, but it's just not something that excites me. It doesn't have really a mood. Like, I kind of get to the point that Tom Hanks is going to do a good job.
Uh-huh.
And, but it I don't know, it almost always feels, his films feel safe a lot of times. And I don't know, I didn't have a whole lot of interest, and I'm kind of a weirdo because I don't know if we talked about this a whole lot, but I feel like it was funny because during the summer you're really funny because you thought I was funny because I was like, man, I just want to watch some, like, you know, like some good art house film or something like that. Well, I feel like when the balance is upset, like if I've been watching too much art house movie or whatever, I have to like watch an entertaining movie. Yeah. So that's kind of why I went. That's why I decided to go to Machete instead of this film, because I know I'll be seeing a lot of these kind of films coming up, and I really don't like seeing films like that. I like a mixed bag of things. And,
yeah. Well, this is an art house by any means.
Well, you know what I mean. Well, art house or just kind of more like serious, prestigious film kind of stuff.
Okay. I mean, I don't even think it's that. I think this, you know, 15 years ago, this could have been a summer release. It's just now in the summer, everything has to be big in CGI.
Yeah.
I honestly think that if you end up seeing this, you probably would like it. It's not, there's nothing about it that's...
But do you think I'd like it and just be kind of like, eh, about it?
Yeah, I don't think you'd have to buy the Blu-ray. I mean, at least I don't. And that's pretty much how I felt about all Paul Greengrass movies in general. I get that he's a talented guy and that he knows what he's doing and he does what he does very well. He's almost kind of like the modern-day Philip Noyce. I shouldn't say modern-day because he still makes movies, but that's kind of the vibe. You know, I don't know. We're talking about this too much. Let's go ahead and move on to our Netflix homework.
Okay.
Which is Room 237. All this month we're talking about horror movies or Halloween-related movies. And this is a little bit of a cheat because this is a documentary.
I don't think it's a cheat.
You didn't think it was a cheat, but I was worried that it was. And this is the documentary about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, which came out in 1980, and all of the crazy subtextual readings that different writers and theorists and insane homeless people talking to their shoes came up with. And it kind of shows all of these different theories play out. I think there's about five different talking heads in this movie. But you never actually see them. It's always staying within clips of the film or other films they bring to make their points. And you just kind of hear these different theories shuffle through till the end, and you see how you know how they try and argue for their different points of view. What did you
think that was one of my main disappointments and dislikes of the film.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a particularly fond of. I would actually rather watch somebody talk in an interview kind of style in a documentary, and then show these maps and these different parts of like film of The Shining itself.
Yeah.
As like reference, as opposed to this kind of cutesy, like, oh, we're mixing in different films to kind of make it, you know, whatever. As a documentary, I kind of take away points for that as film as in and of itself.
Uh huh.
Some of the reads I thought were interesting. Some of them I thought had some very interesting points. Yeah. I really, really did like the, when they would map out the physicality of the actual building.
Yeah, that was really
cool. That was some of the more interesting and better stuff of it. But I mean, even the craziest guy, the moon guy, I actually thought he'd bring up some interesting, like, observations of the film itself. Yeah.
And what is the moon guy? What is he saying
about it? Oh, that basically Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing, and he's admitting to it. Actually, that's not what he's saying completely, because his main argument is they faked the footage, not that they actually faked the moon landing, which I actually thought was kind of strange as well, because I was like, okay, so this guy doesn't think they actually faked the landing, they just faked the footage, so sure. They had something to Cold War about. Which, you know, was kind of, okay, whatever. I mean, yeah, I didn't buy it whatsoever, but the whole thing about the U.S. government following him and stuff. I mean, the U.S. government's following all of us, pal. Get over
it.
But I don't know. I mean, I found a lot of it interesting. Some of it was just insane. It was like, okay, you're kind of grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
But then there was always they'd bring it back. Like, that's the part that I always had a problem with, because at first I'd dismiss something they'd say. And then they'd bring in, but then there'd be a part of the film that was reminiscent of whatever that they were kind of grasping at. And I was like, damn it. So I kind of got a headache at the end of the film. And then I decided that the best alternative is not to try to outthink Stanley Kubrick. He's smarter than me and I'm a dullard and I should just get over that. So that's what I learned from this movie. Stanley Kubrick is smarter and better than me. as a person.
Well, he is a very interesting director to follow, and he's a very interesting movie, or a very interesting director when it comes to arguing about his work. And you could, honestly, you could do a series of this type of movie with all of his movies, because they're all about as dense and as enigmatic. But I do agree with you that I do have to knock points from actually just the documentary style of this movie. It is a little corny that they bring in other movie clips that are not Kubrick movies, to illustrate some of their the narration. But I think more problematic than that is if you are not familiar with Stanley Kubrick and you're just watching this and you've only seen The Shining, or you don't really remember what his other work is, like we do. Then I could easily see somebody watching this and just thinking everything is either that they're showing is either from The Shining or from Stanley Kubrick, and that's not true because there's stuff from other movies.
Yeah,
and I think that's problematic. And also, I think I would have liked to see, I commend the fact that they don't want it just to be a Talking Heads documentary, and they don't want to show the interviews. And I think a lot of these were probably phoned in or Skyped in because some of the sound quality was a little meh too. But
sure.
But I think it would have been helpful to have the Talking Heads there every once in a while because they're changing over from these different theorists every 10 minutes or so. And then there's only one of them that's a female, so they all are men who basically have the same tenor of voice. And I always had to kind of like, which one is this again? Is this the American Indian one? Is this the moon landing guy? Or is this the World War II guy? And it would take me a while to kind of piece together the arguments because they're shuffling them through the movie. So it would have been nice just to get a head or at least a photo or something every once in a while, or even just a subtitle of their name when it pops up to know which one was which.
Right.
So that's just on a technical level. On the actual movie and what it's trying to get across, I enjoyed it. I did think a lot of these were pretty far stretch. I enjoy postmodern subtextual reading into movies. I've done a little bit of that here on this podcast. It was fun to follow their logic, even if it was kind of bizarre at times. But you know, there were some things that did make me think about the way that he shoots things and some of the reasons he shoots things. And I know that you probably did as well. I watched the movie right after.
I did it before because I didn't want any of their biases.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to do my own read and see how I saw it, and then see what these people thought.
Yeah.
So.
And I think basically what you said, you know, don't try and outthink Kubrick. I think the underlying feeling you get from watching The Shining is it is about something. Mm. That you know, it is a horror movie and it's really effective horror movie and it's you know, Stephen King, blah, blah, blah. But it also, you also get the vibe that there is something going on here that's not, directly surface.
What do you think about the reverse film?
I really want to see that. That was, I think, one of the most interesting things about the documentary.
I was talking with some friends that had seen this, and they're like, that's completely silly. I think that they're grasping. I don't think so, really, because, it would be a pain in the ass to do. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that he's that kind of a meticulous director. Like, if you watch, like, Barry Lyndon, some of the fucking shots in that are ridiculous. He's such a meticulous director. All you'd really have to do is people are like, well, you'd have to go back and watch a film. I didn't really have the technology. No, you just go, at this time, this happens. At this time, this happens. At this time, this happens.
Oh, you mean just you could just write it out, like script it out, what happened?
Yeah, you if you had an outline, a rough outline, you could really... I think you could really fold it, and just the mirrors, all the mirrors and that kind of stuff to me, that actually, some of that kind of stuff kind of got to me a little bit.
Well,
I just enjoy Batman's insanity.
Yeah.
Or it really, his argument was one of the more convincing. Well, him and the American Indians guy.
Yeah.
Those were the two that I followed.
Those are the two that it seemed to be, they were most interested in the text itself. Whereas the other people, a lot of what I got from this movie, from a lot of these theorists, is these are people who just aren't into horror films. So when they went to a Stanley Kubrick film, and they were upset that it ended up being more genre than a lot of his other work, they had to find some way to make it not genre. And, you know, I want to see it the way they were showing it with the layers and everything, where you superimpose the forward to back and the back to the forward together. It's kind of hard to describe if you don't see the documentary, but some of the scenes they were showing, just the imagery and the way they would juxtapose together, intentional or not, I think it would be a really interesting experience.
No, agreed. I mean, you can hypothesize all you want if it was or not.
Yeah.
I just don't think, because some people say it's like rocket science, but to me it's like, no, that's doable. Yeah. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it's doable. And for a capable director, at the point where he was at the time he made The Shining, especially, I think after Barry Lyndon and some of the other films, I think that this one would be kind of actually a lot easier than some of the other stuff he took on. So to me, it's not as crazy. And I don't know if it's necessarily that he was trying to make the film work so you could watch it forward and backward like that. But what I think he wanted that mirror image.
Yeah, there's definitely a parallelism going on in the structure. Yeah.
And so I'd never noticed that personally. And so kind of thinking back on that, so that's something that the next time I watch it, I'll definitely keep an eye out for.
Sure. Okay, cool. So what are you assigning me next week?
Next week we're going to do some Italian horror, because that's good stuff. A Mario Bava film, The Black Sunday, so.
And then last year around this time we did Black Sabbath, which was his anthology film. So it's, I don't know, maybe we'll make this a tradition, one Bava film every year.
there we go.
They're all on there. Cool. Well, I've never seen it before, so I'm excited. And if anybody else has anything to say about anything that we've talked about, the Oscar movies that are coming up. The movie news, Machete, Captain Phillips, Room 237. What are your crazy theories? You can send that to us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com if you have any other general questions for the show. If you have anything else you want to, if you just want to stay in contact with us in general, you can do so through our Facebook, which is facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there, and you can see when we post new news items between episodes and some things we might not talk about on the show. You can also download us or stream us at our Podbean webpage, which is jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can also find our RSS feed there to subscribe. You can also subscribe to us and write us a review on iTunes. So if you go to the iTunes store, look up podcast Jabber in the Drone, we should pop up. And please leave a sentence and a star rating if you enjoy us. And you can read my movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. And I update that weekly every weekend when my reviews go up. And you can also read other content that I have done for the MacGuffin podcast out of Seattle at mcguff.in/authors/CassidyRobinson. Or you can just go to my Salad Fork Reviews blogspot, and I also have a link to MacGuffin from there. Richard, you can find tricycling through the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah. That's a good one. I don't even have any comments for you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.